Hey, welcome to the Happier Amp podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always by my good friends in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronnie J. Martin. Boys, we got a full slate of things to talk about and a full slate of sponsors today, man. Our cup runneth over here at Happier Amp Studios. So, Barnabas, without further ado, man, you are the Michael Jordan of the book promo. You're yes. the Picasso of the promo for art lovers out there. Why don't you hit us with a little promo, and then we'll get into these topics, baby.
I would prefer to think of myself as the Andy Warhol of book promos for artists, but to each his own.
I see, man. I see where you're going with that. I like it.
To each his own.
Wow. You try to throw a guy a compliment, and he just has to totally...
And the compliment gets edited, you know.
The art community is nothing if not a bit snobbish about their preferences, so I have to speak into that. Our first sponsor is Nav Press, and specifically the book Bound to Be Free. The subtitle is Escaping Performance to Be Captured by Grace, and it's by D.A. Horton. D.A. is actually a friend of mine. I've known him for a few years, and we got to know each other through some conferences in Chicago and the like, but really good teacher, good author, good writer. One of the best that I've met at taking current culture and sort of drawing out biblical and theological and life themes. And the whole idea of this book is it's broken into two halves. The first half talks about what he calls the performance trap. So the idea of feeling trapped to perform in relationships, needing affirmation from other people, living up to peers' expectations, just trying to find happiness in performance. And then the second half is what he calls the trap of God's grace. And it's actually the trap that sets us free. And that's trusting God, being reconciled to God, affection from God, and then the partnership with the saints of God. And in all of these, it's all very it's very relevant to everyday life. So this is not all a theoretical thing. He weaves in a lot of his story, shares other people's stories, current context, all these different kinds of things. He's a really honest and humble writer, so he's not somebody who's coming at it from the perspective of sort of the know-it-all talk down to the readers, but sounds like he's walking alongside the readers. So again, that is a book called Bound to Be Free, Escaping Performance to Be Captured by Grace. Y'all should check it out. D.A. has written a couple other books that came out from Moody Publishers a few years ago. Had a chance to work with him on his first one. If for no other reason, you should get this because he is such a great guy. So you can get this anywhere. It came out just a couple weeks ago. Bound to Be Free. Go check it out at Amazon or Lifeway.com or Barnes & Noble or wherever it is you buy your books. And go get it so that DA can go plant a church in Los Angeles, and you are helping him do that.
Wow, Big R once again, man. I'm just floored, and my
dream.
Yeah,
I don't even. Do we continue with the broadcast, or do
we just, could just close the program now? You know, Rachel, the hell, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. We've wandered to and fro. That was the book promo. We're out. Thank you.
We should, baby, just, you know what? Should we just do a special episode of book promos? I mean, the way you guys praise this, I'm wondering if our ratings would go up, and we could get sponsors just by sponsoring.
Right, you know, and that would be like a week off for Ted and I as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean,
that would be such a, you know, hipsters talk about things that are meta. That would be meta.
It's inception like is really what it is.
Yeah,
amazing that that was a Christopher Nolan movie, right? Inception was.
I think it was.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, he has reshaped how we think about things, because Inception is now like the reference points for layers upon layers. So
layers upon layers, man.
Well, listen,
that was a movie that I was very humdrum about that movie. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but
you mean a couple of guys that have some dreams? Yeah, it was good.
Baby, speaking of dreams and speaking of movies, a few days ago we had the 88th Oscar ceremony. I don't know how you guys feel about the Oscars. This used to be like appointment viewing in my household. Like we would, you know, we would sort of look forward to this and gather around. Sometimes we would have parties. I don't know if it's age or I don't know if it's just, you know, better perspective or whatever, but like a lot of things, it's kind of jumped the shark for me and gotten a little old. And I felt especially this year, like it was just very much Hollywood, like thinking that it was solving all of society's problems and then simultaneously like patting itself on the back for solving all of society's problems. And
wait, Hollywood is self-congratulatory. I'm confused.
Yeah, I know, dude. I know it's a shock, but that dynamic, I think, caused me to shut it off after about 20 minutes. So, I've only got 20 minutes worth of like context to work with, but, what were your guys' thoughts on the Oscars, man? I mean, we've got the Chris Rock monologue, which was, to me, like, utterly predictable, but yet still controversial. I guess there are a lot of people talking about that. We've got DeCap winning his first Oscar and giving a movie
that he didn't deserve it for.
Yeah, exactly. And then giving a prepared sermon on climate change, which I'm sure was really powerful. So, I don't know. You guys riff on that, man. What was your take on the Oscars?
Yeah, hit it, Piper.
Okay. Well, I chose not to watch them in full this year, partly because I watched the Grammys from tip to tail, and so I'm award showed out, but partly because I've tried to watch the Oscars, and yeah, I just, there's just a sense of, I don't know if it's the self-congratulatory thing or it's so smarmy. The biggest thing is just like the movies that win awards are not movies that I've seen. That's what's really what it boils down to. And I feel like the reason the Oscars used to be better is because mainstream movies used to win. And I feel like more and more the movies that win are these fringy, maybe not fringy, but they're ones that win because of their fringiness. So, hey, this one's going to win because they filmed it with all natural lighting, as if that makes a better movie. It's that kind of stuff. And so it's, I just find it harder to connect with it. And then the whole, like the Chris Rock thing, Chris Rock's one of my favorite comedians and I will listen to him talk about just about anything. And I thought what he had to say was, it's Chris Rock being able to say things that only he can say. And I didn't find it terribly controversial because what he said was kind of patently true and obvious. He got in his shots at different people. He made fun of Kevin Hart a few times, which is always fun. And I don't know. I kind of came away feeling like, I don't know. The whole thing was just kind of like they wanted to make it controversial, and then they think they have more power than they do. And then the people who make decisions on these movies they're not actual movie viewers. They're like 65-year-old white millionaire movie makers who have no concept of what normal people like. And until a comedy gets nominated for Best Picture, I feel like, or a comedian gets nominated for Best Actor, I kind of feel like the Oscars are irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, Big R, what about you, man? What's your take on all this?
Dude, I don't know. I'm like you, Big T. I got about 20. I think I got to Best Supporting Actress, and then that was about where I signed off. So I caught the obligatory Rock intro, which I thought was, you know, it's funny. I forget which one you guys just described it as being like predictable at the same time, kind of controversial. That was you, Big T. But it was, I totally agree with that. There was something like mildly, offensive about it. Not from like my standpoint, but I'm thinking about other people that might've been watching it that are a little more sensitive to like social issues. And I just, there was a part about it where I thought, okay, like Hollywood's feeling uber guilty about something right now. So they need to get Rock up there to sort of like poke fun at them and sort of like tear them down.
Like self-flagellation kind of.
Yeah. But almost like, man, it's almost like Hollywood's like standing there going like, look at the climate of the world right now. And this is super embarrassing. It's super embarrassing to sort of get everybody together, pat ourselves on the back, hand ourselves awards, and we got to have somebody that can sort of tear that down a little bit so that we have a little bit of justification for just doing this bombastically ridiculous thing, which is give each other awards. And it's so funny that nobody ever calls that aspect of it out. I mean, it's the Academy giving the Academy award. It's like pretty soon we're going to have the Happy Rant Awards and we can like literally like nominate, you know, each other, and we can pick each other's best performance segment out of the three.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like we all win something, but then maybe, I don't know, maybe we need to get a comedian on. Maybe we need to bring back Al Trogi from rehab and he can make fun of us to justify the ridiculousness of it.
Dude, you know? We should do a Happy Rant Award show app. That should be the next step.
I nominate Ronnie as best co-host.
Does that make sense what I'm saying, fellas?
It does.
That totally makes sense. Look, man, my thing was, it's just not fun. You know, it's not fun to get preached at by a bunch of Hollywood people. And like, if we can't have fun talking about movies, like movies are the most kind of frivolous form of American entertainment. Like if that award show isn't fun, then nothing's fun. You know what I mean? Like there was even nothing new about the outrage. Like even the outrage was boring.
And I feel like fun movies don't stand a chance. That's one of the things that kind of turns me off to it is like, you know, James Bond movies are never going to be nominated for anything. The Bourne movies are never going to be nominated for anything. Rocky. I mean, Rocky might have enough dramatic cachet. You know, there's going to be some nominations, Best Supporting Actor or whatever. But, like, the movies that people go to because they're like, man, that just looks awesome. Star Wars. It's going to win Best Cinematography or whatever. And the awards that movie makers care about, normal people are like, I don't even know what that is. And,
But Piper, what about Mad Max? Like, I was shocked at how everybody was like, oh, Mad Max, Road to Fury.
No, but here's the thing. The reason that won, if, like, I tweeted that I thought Mad Max Fury Road was a better movie than The Revenant. And so you got a handful of people who think I'm insane and a handful of people who totally agreed. But the people who agreed did not say that was an awesome, fun movie. They were like, it was such an amazing depiction of masculinity and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, it was really fun watching dudes swing on these huge, like, spring-loaded poles and try to rip other people out of vehicles and blow stuff up. And, you know, like, yes, there was some themes in that movie that were pretty powerful, but, like, it was just a really sweet movie.
Yeah. Wow.
But that's not why it got nominated.
Dude, R.E. Rocky, I thought Chris Rock's only funny joke was where he equated Rocky to a science fiction movie because it takes place in a world where white athletes are better than black athletes.
I was dying.
That was so freaking funny, man.
I mean, guys, can we just say that Chris Rock was the best? I mean, I mean, that was, the 25 minutes I viewed, I mean, Rock was easily the highlight, you know? I love a guy that can get up there and kind of do what he does. I mean, on a completely network/commercial level. I mean, because I really thought a lot of the things he was saying, I feel like he couldn't have even said this a decade ago. And so I'm not trying to say it was so progressive in that way. But it was enough to where I was thinking, like he's kind of getting away with murder right now in some ways. And but, so, yeah, I don't know, I was kind of impressed by that.
Here's the thing. Like, in liberal white contexts, talking about how race issues need to change, even especially when you are insulting white people, is like the utmost acceptable thing. Like, that's your badge of honor.
That's the easiest and most boring thing to
do. It is the badge of honor. And I fall prey to this. It is the easiest thing as a white person to talk about how much white people suck about race stuff.
Absolutely.
And so he got up there and said it. And I'm sure he was saying that with a lot more meaning than your average liberal white person does. The thing is, the Oscars are going to look exactly the same next year. You know,
I'm with you. I just think there's something really amazing when you got Chris Rock up there talking about, like, you know, like his people being raped and his grandma hanging from a tree and the whole place is like erupting in laughter.
No, that was nervous laughter because
yeah, for sure, but it was like, still laughter.
That was I don't want the camera to catch me not appreciating this and thereby labeling me a bigot sort of laughter. Yeah,
everybody's thinking of their whatever Vine is going to be posted of their reaction, and so they have to give the appropriate amount of laughter. And again, they're all actors, so they're pretty good at it. If he said the same thing at the Grammys, there would have been some great reactions because musicians don't have those the same acting faces as, you know, Jennifer Lawrence and whoever else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, fun night had by all. I mean, it was I agree with you, Ted. I mean, and I know we can't go on about this forever, but I really think at the end of the day, what it is for me, if I'm just going to be very popcorn about it, it's just absolutely boring. It's dull.
Yeah, completely dull. And
it takes 4 hours. I can't watch anything for four hours.
There was a time when I thought it wasn't dull. You know what I mean? There was a time when I thought, like, this is big. This is cool. Like, this is a thing that I should watch. And I don't know if it's our age talking, baby. That's the thing. Like, I don't think it's smaller.
I know, because we used to have the Academy Award parties, and it was almost like a Super Bowl party. And, like, you'd invite everybody over, and it was fun. It was celebratory. Yeah. There was something. It was like an excuse to get everybody together and eat really bad food and, like, watch DiCaprio lose another Academy Award, you know. And now I just feel like I can barely stomach it. So, yeah, maybe it is age. Maybe it's just a sensitivity to things like that tend to irritate us more than when we were in our 20s. Like, I don't know.
I don't think it's age. I think it's a society kind of shift away from, you know, experts telling us what matters. You know, so there is a cloistered group of people who have decided which movies matter and which ones don't. And we're supposed to be in shock and awe about their choices when we are in a position as soon as we see a movie to go participate in the rating of that movie. So if I go see The Revenant and I think it was a B-plus movie, I can blog that, I can tweet that, I can communicate with people about that, and really what the Academy thinks about that movie makes zero difference. Whereas it kind of used to be where like that was, it was kind of like the Super Bowl because they determined who the winners were. And now it's kind of like, well, we determined who the winners are and they just get to have their opinion too.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah, it's a big, you know, much like the Super Bowl, kind of a big bloated joke anymore. Well, speaking of the Super Bowl, guys, remember a couple of weeks ago when we got a weird piece of mail from a fan, kind of telling us everything that we did wrong from a show prep and research standpoint. And then the week that followed, we read that email on the air in such a way that we thought we were like ripping it to pieces.
It is
do you
true.
Remember this? Yeah,
I do.
So that happened on the program. And part of what was said in that email, after all the stuff about how we sucked at research and we should open Wikipedia while we record, was kind of an interesting question about football, about American football. And, you know, he asked several questions within it. But really the gist was, you know, how can you like the game? So how can you be one of these dads or one of these people that like really loves to watch football and then not let your kid play it? And then inside of that was stuff about the concussion issue and stuff about like, you know, the objectification of women during football broadcasts. And he was basically asking the question, like, how can any of you guys watch and celebrate this sport? Big R, I know that you neither watch or celebrate it, but you live in a place geographically that does very much celebrate it. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh gosh, man. That's yeah. I mean, so this is a guy that is just, we don't really know if he's necessarily a sports fan or not. He just doesn't like sort of all of the kind of what kind of culture it's creating. Is that kind of the
right.
gist?
Right. He used to, yeah, basically he has moved away from loving football the more he's observed. Like basically it's left a really bad taste in his mouth is what he said. As he's noticed the safety issues, the hypocrisy of it, he mentioned objectification of women. Quick side point on that. If you watch the Oscars or any movie and you enjoy those, you might be slightly hypocritical about the objectification of women. But that's a side note. And yeah, that was sort of his point.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a social commentary, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like it's interesting that we were just talking about the Oscars, and now we're kind of moving into something that is just as much of a showy celebratory culture, in the sense that I think when you leave when anything sort of grows to those types of like heights in our society, I mean, there's really only one place for it to go, and I think all the things that our listener is complaining about that we just essentially complained about in terms of the Oscars. I mean, unless you have a love for cinema and film and the Oscars is sort of your, you know, one of the big highlights of your year. And unless you're a massive football fan, I mean, all of those kinds of things are going to become exaggerated, aren't they? So you're either going to plug into these things, enjoying the artistic or the, you know, in your guys' case, you know, sort of the athletic aspects of it. And you're going to have to ignore the rest of it, you know, because at the end of the day, there's still films. At the end of the day, there's still a game being played. So you either like it for those aspects, getting back to the core of what it is, or the other stuff is going to drive you crazy. So for me, I mean, again, not to get off topic, but to go back to the Academy Awards, I'm just not a massive, massive film guy. So when I watch things like that, it's all the other things that start annoying me because I'm just not dying on the vine of film. And again, so I think that's the question for anybody to ask when they get into something that is going to have, you know, these love hate sort of qualities to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think you bring up a really good point about that sort of, you attach yourself to the core of what the thing is. I mean, we were talking earlier about movies, like movies are supposed to be fun. And when you start to get belaboring all these other aspects of it, you just sort of suck the fun out of it. And I think football at its essence is the same way. Like it's brutal, it's aggressive, it's a lot of things, but it's a fun game. And it's a fun game to watch. And if I had sons, I would let them play. And I would obviously be conscientious. You know, if they got a concussion, I don't know if I'd let them play anymore, because that can go downhill quickly. But it's just when people start talking about the morality of football from a really, really high horse, they've lost touch with, like, this is a really fun game. And that matters. Like, that's a, and not only that, I mean, it's a really magnificent game to watch too, if you're watching really highly skilled players. And so does that justify everything that people complain about? No, but I don't think you can just write it off and say it's an immoral thing and be done with it, because that misses the point. And the people who say that don't tend to be people who really love football.
Well, Ted, you're a football player. I think if I remember correctly, you sent me in Pipe a photo of you doing a little semi-pro.
What were you wearing? Like a triple X purple T-shirt over your pads?
Dude, no. So I connected with this team, and I came in for this game like right at the 11th hour, and they had a jersey for me that was gigantic, and it didn't even have a number on it. So this was sort of a scrimmage. This was like a preseason game against another team in Arena Football, and it was that was the deal with the jersey. But yeah, no, I love football.
Did you repent after you played?
I did. I spent a lot of time repenting, still doing that. But yeah, no, I love it, guys. My goodness. I mean, I've spent so much of my life like playing this game, writing about the game, thinking about it, enjoying it. And yeah, I mean, can you take any aspect of life, whether it's sitcoms or movies or music or whatever, and pick, you know, things out of it that are bad, that are damaging, of course, you know, but, that doesn't mean we lock ourselves in our houses and never go outside. It doesn't mean we never, you know, we never turn on the TV. It doesn't mean we never, you know, kind of venture outside the bubble that we're in. And, yeah, I mean, I guess I love football so much that I see it as, you know, something worth investing in. You know, I guess I want to be coaching and I want to be playing and I want to be, you know, involved in people's lives that are in football, which sounds like a very sanctimonious answer, but really that's where I'm at, you know. And Big R, I'm sure you feel the same way about music. I mean, you love making music, you want to be a part of it, and you see value in that. So, so yeah, I mean, I guess that's where, you know, that's where it ends for me, you know. And yeah, if at any point my kid gets concussions or I feel like it's not good for us to be involved in the game anymore, I'll reevaluate it. But yeah, I guess I haven't seen the big sort of objectification of women element, you know, in the levels that I'm involved in. You know, I guess I don't feel the same conviction that this guy feels about it, but I do find it very hypocritical that, you know, you can swing a cat in any direction in our churches and hit a bunch of dads who don't let their kids play football, but who are more than thrilled to like race home from church on Sunday and watch 8 hours of it. You know, I guess I respect this guy at least for having dropped the whole thing. If he's going to be sort of somewhat judgmental about it, at least he's gone all the way.
Yeah, and I think we can enjoy things while acknowledging the ridiculousness of it, because, you know, we live in, you know, the society we live in exaggerates everything. So, and again, the society we live in is a godless society at the same time. So yeah, anything that has any redeeming quality to it, is eventually going to be, you know, pushed to excess, pushed to extreme. And I think we can acknowledge that. I mean, good grief, man. I've been, you know, as somebody who's been in the music industry for years, I mean, what a reprehensible, like, industry, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, a song is still a song, you know?
Sure.
And you either love it because you enjoy songwriting or music production and those aspects of it, or music performance and those aspects of it. Or you can just say, well, look at all the, you know, the objectification of women. Well, sure, all that stuff's going on, and there's not a lot I can do to push against that other than to say I'm not a part of that, but I also enjoy the craft of, you know, music making, listening, performing, and we can take it on that, you know, on that basis, I think. But.
And in regards to the objectification of women, while, I mean, I've heard that accusation leveled against football because, you know, cheerleaders?
Is that what we're talking about?
I would assume so. But I mean, the commercial breaks are usually loaded with you know, beer ads and whatever else that are just pure sex appeal and very little else. And I guess my response to that, and I do not mean this in a way as to cheapen the seriousness or to lessen the seriousness of that problem, but to say that is not a football problem. That has nothing to do with football. That is a marketing problem. Music markets that way. I mean, we talked about this on an episode a few weeks ago where like Christian music does this. They try to take the prettiest people and put them in the least provocative pose they can that is still sort of provocative and show the most skin they can without being actually, you know, immodest. And it's just that's just what sells. And I don't mean just as in like it's okay, but that's a dumb accusation at football because that is something that it sells beer, it sells chewing gum, it sells cars, it sells music, it sells movies. I mean, movies include this stuff for that reason. And it is a cultural issue across the board and that you also happen to find in football.
Absolutely. Boys, we've got time for one more topic, but before we do that, Pipe, we have yet another sponsor for you to beautifully promo here, so I'm going to throw it to you quickly.
We do. You said at the beginning that our cup runneth over with sponsors, and I considered doing this one in pure King James English, but I didn't have time to do a rewrite. So, no, it's Moody Publishers and a book called Habits for Our Holiness, How the Spiritual Disciplines Grow Us Up, Draw Us Together, and Send Us Out. And it's by a guy named Philip Nation, who I actually work with at Lifeway. Philip oversees a lot of our publishing. He's also a local pastor, really good guy, very much invested in the people of his church and in the work. And he's somebody you should get behind, I think. And I realize promoting an author is a strange thing when we're talking about a book, but really you're buying the voice of the author. So he's worth it. The whole premise of the book is about taking spiritual disciplines and kind of rethinking them because for some, discipline is a word that we don't like because it feels like it sort of dries up Christianity. Discipline doesn't seem like it has a lot of soul in it. And his point is that disciplines are the thing that connects us to God and connects us to others in the most meaningful way. So he goes through worship and Bible study and prayer, fasting, fellowship, rest, even things like simple living and servanthood, and just looks at how those things connect us upward with God and then outward with other people, but not in any sort of worldly way of saying, you know, if you do these things, life will be better, but just saying there's a richness to life here. There's a reward there. There's a payoff. And so again, that book is Habits for Our Holiness, How the Spiritual Disciplines Grow Us Up, Draw Us Together, and Send Us Out by Philip Nation. And it came out a couple weeks ago as well, and it's available now. And since Philip works at Lifeway, you should go to lifeway.com and buy that, but it is available everywhere else you can get books too.
Outstanding, baby. Thank you for that. Guys, like I said, one more topic on tap today, and it sort of fits culturally with the other two, I think, because it involves a kind of, you know, ridiculous institution now, sadly enough, and it's kind of this election cycle. It's politics. We just had Super Tuesday a day ago now, a day from when we're in the studio now, and you know, we're approaching a scenario in which we could conceivably have either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton as our president. So the question here is it okay to not vote? What do you guys think about that?
Ronnie, I'll let you take this one first. It was your idea.
Yeah, the question has kind of come up, and it's coming up a little bit in our congregation, right? Which is, you know, I feel like there's this kind of, you know, conservative American, and maybe not conservative American, but just an overall American bent that says, the power of the American people is that they get to vote. And so there's always been, you know, in my lifetime, there was always this big push, you know, get out there, vote, vote, vote. And it's kind of been twisted into this thing to where it's almost like you feel like you're somehow anti-American or you're somehow, and it, from a church perspective, from the perspective of being a believer, you know, who attends a church, an evangelical believer, you almost feel like maybe it's a sin if I don't vote or I'm not allowed to have a voice or complain or have an opinion about politics if I don't even take the time to vote. And so I think, you know, we've seen just sort of a sort of, you know, we've been kind of indoctrinated with that. And so now the question comes, well, if we have Hillary on the left and we have a guy like Trump on the right, the question is, do I still have to vote for one of them? Should I even vote for the less of two evils if there isn't a less of two evils when you look at these two candidates? And so there's just been a little bit of a wrestle with that. And, you know, I kind of come from the standpoint that says, you know, a right to vote is also a right not to vote. And sometimes you make your voice known by not doing something as much as doing something. And I think that to just vote because we need to, you know, sort of enact our civil duty or our right as an American, I think it can go against our conscience, saying that we just vote for somebody who we completely disagree with, but we believe in one or two points we have some agreement with as opposed to the other candidate. And I feel like we've kind of come to this bizarro place now to where, again, coming from an evangelical Christian standpoint, man, we're not really given a very good option of which we should cast our ballot for.
Vibe, what's your take?
I have two thoughts. One is every time I hear the phrase about people talking about candidates on the left and on the right, all I can think of are the lyrics, clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. And that feels like it sums up this election cycle really well. And the second is, and I don't remember who said it, I wish I could credit them because it's not my quote. Basically, they said, we'll say it was Charles Spurgeon because he said a lot of great things. He said, if you're choosing between two evils and you try to choose the lesser, you're still choosing an evil. And I think it is a matter of conscience in the sense that putting your vote behind somebody, even if they're the lesser of two evils, is still putting your vote behind them. And so I think there's validity in saying, I will not put my vote behind either of those people, whoever those people are, for whatever reason you choose. Would it be great if we had a candidate that we thought that would make a great president? They're morally upstanding. They're going to do right by the people of this country. They understand the Constitution and their role and all these things. Yeah, but we haven't had that in a while. So I think not voting is a valid option. And I also think the people who say, if you don't vote, you forfeit your right to complain. Not true. I'm a citizen of this country and I'm a taxpayer and my taxes grant me the right, as does my citizenship. And then I've been told by people before, I've been told by at least two people, if you, it is a sin not to vote, like verbatim.
Oh yeah.
And,
which is absurd.
I couldn't help but laugh when they told me that, because it just, that strikes me as so tying the civic reality to the biblical reality. And just, there's a confused mess in somebody's mind if they think that is true, because the voting is not a biblical principle. Civic duty has some tenets that are deeply rooted in Scripture, but they're tenets of justice and love and those kinds of things, not the systems of a democratic republic. So I don't know. I think people who choose not to vote are exercising their conscience and their civic right to not do that, and I think they should feel just fine about that, as long as they're not doing it out of sheer laziness.
Well, what would happen if the church sort of stood up in this particular moment in time? And I don't know what that means when I say the church standing up, because that, you know, there's a billion implications to what that would even mean. But what if the church sort of stood up and they actually exercised their right not to vote? I mean, is there a scenario that we can sort of dream up of what that might look like?
Oh, man. I don't even know.
All I can hear is the screams and yells of people saying, but look who's going to determine who's president if we don't get out there and vote. And the reality is, quote-unquote, evangelical Christians are currently putting their votes behind guys like Donald Trump. So I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure that us voting or not voting is going to really affect the direction of this country greatly, because the majority of society doesn't give a crap about biblical principles.
Right.
The church could boycott the polls, and I don't think the presidential election would change all that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it would this year.
Fair enough.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking this year. I mean, in years past, maybe. But there's another interesting factor here, and that is traditionally conservative evangelicals have been tied really closely to the Republican Party. And so the thought would be that if the church boycotted – maybe that's the wrong word, because boycott is a kind of a loaded, nasty word. If we stood up and tried to make a stand against some of the political realities and we didn't vote, the thought would be, well, then the Democrats will win. Yeah. Although, again, I think that's probably changing too, especially if Trump is the nominee.
Guys, I've never really labored under the idea that my vote really mattered, you know?
Yep.
Weirdly enough, I don't know. Some years I've voted, some years I haven't. I don't know. It's just, I've never really freighted this issue with a lot of, you know, a lot of import, I guess. But guys, we have done what we always do. We've wandered to and fro. We've covered some heavy topics today, man. There was very little haha today, so I hope our listeners who tune in for the haha will forgive us.
Yeah, we'll lighten it up next time. We'll
lighten it up next time. It was a lot of heavy today.
Just go listen to the Clowns to the Left of Me, Jokers to the Right song, and think about Hillary and Trump, and your spirits will be lifted.
Dude, that's right. That pipe. That's good advice, man. That's solid. You know, leave it to Barnabas to really make practical all of what we've talked about.
I think the song is called Stuck in the Middle, but I can't remember exactly.
Who's the artist on that one, Pipe? Do you know?
We're going to call him a one-hit wonder, or I could look it up on Wikipedia, as we were instructed to do.
Ooh, there you go.
No.
Which will revolutionize.
Should we just guess?
Yeah, we just make something up. Make up the artist.
Here's what we do.
Insane Clown Posse.
Insane Clown Posse. Insane Clowns to the Left of Me Posse.
It is an artist named Steeler's Wheel.
Wow. Yeah, Steeler's Wheel, yep. Of course. I mean, the long career that they had.
One of my favorite bands.
Although, yeah, let's see, I also see Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
I used to follow Steeler's Wheel across the country.
I think,
and by across the country, you mean across certain parts of southern Ohio.
Dude, I was so bummed the day they broke up, man. I literally took out all my Steeler's Wheel records.
All the tears.
The Steve Miller Band is the one who made it famous, though. I'm not positive about any of this. So,
yeah, you know what? That sounds right, Pipe.
That was my first instinct, but I didn't trust it, so I went to Google, and Google confused me. So that was my last effort at fact-checking anything. I should have just said Steve Miller Band and gone with it.
Here's what's a win-win about this scenario. When we say things on the air that end up being wrong, everybody checks in on Twitter, and we still get a bunch of like traction from that, man, because people love nothing more than correcting us and being right.
So keep being wrong.
I found out that white fanging was a thing that appeared on some show.
Yeah.
That I don't
it was, New Girl. Was that, or is that right? We got hit up on that one on Twitter, and at least one person hit us up and made it sound as if like that was a legitimate cultural reference. They're like, no, that's from New Girl. Like, that's a thing. And I'm like,
that's a thing.
I think your point of reference might need to be adjusted.
Let me say this on behalf of you guys. I apologize for not having watched every episode of every show that exists before I made that statement. You know, I mean, I feel like that was irresponsible of me to not watch the entire Netflix library before going on the air.
Well, and even if you have,
maybe it's time to let this whole podcast thing go, Big T.
I feel like it's passing us by, Vigar. You know, we've lost a step, so to speak.
Yep, yeah. Hang it up. You've jumped the shark.
Well, guys, it was great doing this, and you know, let's just enjoy the legacy that we've built, and we'll start something again next week.
Right off into the sunset, boys. You know, sometimes it's time.
It is.
Well, we've wandered to and fro. We've gone to a really dark place emotionally, I think, all three of us, as we ponder our retirement from this illustrious business. Lots to think about, lots to mull over there. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
I found myself on a ledge, three stories high at some condominiums, contemplating my life and struggling to understand my purpose. Have you ever found yourself on the ledge? My name is Billy Ant. I'm a caring father, mentor, and friend. In my new podcast, Billy and the Goat, I share the life-changing events that shaped who I am today to remind you that no matter how far you've fallen, God can help you get up and thrive. Listen now at lifeaudio.com.